All right, guys, welcome along to another episode of the Martin's World podcast. Guys, before I get into introducing today's guest, I just want to remind you, if you want to support the show, support the fight for cannabis legalization in Ireland, you can sign up to patreon.com/Martin's World, or you can also make a donation in the form of Bitcoin through the link found on martinsworld.ie. All of the funds there, guys, will be used to help me establish a cannabis activist hub here in Cork City, so we can bring together the cannabis activists, the cannabis community, so we can be better represented when the time for legalization comes, and to even fight for it too. So guys, today's guest joins me all the way from Boston. My guest is Circa O'Regan, who was born to two Irish parents, not just Irish, but Cork Northsiders. And she moved back to Ireland at the age of 8, where she grew up on Cork's Northside. Circa is a healthcare provider who's worked with people at the end stages of their life. And she's also worked as a bud tender in the cannabis industry in Boston, where it's legal for both medical and recreational uses currently. She's witnessed the tremendous benefits cannabis has brought to people's lives, people suffering from many conditions, but I suppose most importantly, those people at the end stages of life having that alternative between morphine and cannabis. She talks about how beneficial it was to those people. Circa also, I suppose, has benefited from cannabis use illegally while living in Ireland, and she talks about that in the podcast too, how cannabis helped her with her own health conditions. So guys, without further ado, I give you Circa O'Regan. Enjoy. Circa, thanks very much for taking the time out of your day to come and speak to me on the Martin's World podcast. It's a pleasure to have you on. I suppose the first question I would have for you, maybe would you be able to tell us your own background, your education or your work, your profession?
Yeah, it would be my pleasure to. So I'm going to give you a little bit of an extended background on this just to make sure that I touch on everything. Both my parents are Irish. They're both from the north side of Cork. I was born in Boston and I lived here until I was about 8 or 9, and then we moved back to Ballyvlan. Lived in Ballyvlan then up until I was 21, but during that time I went to school. I went to school in St. Aidan's, and then for my last 2 years I went to Bruce College. I went to UCC after that, where unfortunately I actually had to drop out due to mental health issues. I suffered from very bad anxiety and depression. I still do, but it's much more manageable now. That's actually where I got introduced to cannabis in the first, is when I was suffering with mental health in that time, and I dropped out of college. I took a year out. From there, I did go back to school about a year later to become a healthcare assistant, and I worked in nursing homes throughout Cork for 5 years until I moved back out here to Boston again. When I first moved back out here to Boston, I was working again with healthcare, and that's again where I saw a lot of the cannabis use being used. A lot of the people who had terminal illnesses, and I was taking care of them on their last days, they were choosing to use cannabis products rather than morphine and anything else that was being given to them, because it just brought them more comfort that they were still able to be somewhat with it to talk to their family. No, that wasn't the case every time, because everyone's experience is different, but that's again a big eye-opener for me. Seeing people finding comfort with cannabis at the end of their life was something that really helped me in that moment. And then from there I kind of just started applying to different cannabis jobs that were in Boston, because medical and recreational cannabis were both legalized here. And after seeing the benefits of what it's done, thankfully, you know, I was able to get a job in the cannabis industry. I was working in the dispensary for 2 years. So I was a bud tender. I was selling people product medically and recreationally. And that just, I thought my eyes and like were open up until that point, but it totally changed my whole perspective on everything, because I got to see everything from babies coming in to 90-year-olds coming in, all coming in for, you know, medical reasons. And then you had your people who were coming in for recreational too. You know, that's kind of where my whole perspective on it changed. And it's been great so far. I absolutely love it. I really, really do.
Yeah, you've had an interesting view, or interesting place to look at this from, I suppose, from yourself first. first getting introduced to cannabis for your own kind of health reasons. Maybe just to talk a little bit about that. That was here in Ireland, or was that in Boston that you were introduced to it?
Yeah, so the first time I tried cannabis was over in Boston, like during a summer vacation that I was over here. But when I first started using cannabis for medicinal reasons, I started using it in Ireland. Now, when I say for medicinal reasons, again, my knowledge since then has continuously evolved. At the time, I was just microdosing any like herb that I could get my hand on. Now, microdosing would be, you know, not smoking a whole joint of it, but like taking two or three hits until I can feel myself kind of calm down, waiting 15 minutes and seeing if that's good enough, and then going about my day. So it wouldn't impair me in any way, but it would get me to a stage where my anxiety was bearable. Like there was times that I couldn't walk outside my door without bursting into tears because I was too anxious to walk down the street for X, Y, and Z reason. You know, when it's mental health, you can never really pinpoint it in the moment. And being able to microdose cannabis in Ireland was like how I got started and how like was beneficial for me. But in saying that, it was very difficult to get my hands on, and I knew that it was illegal. I was also like just 18 at the time, so like I would have probably gotten a lot of trouble if I got caught, which I was aware of. But it was a chance that I was willing to take, because the way I was looking at it is I can either get caught and like arrested for this, or I can give myself a comfortable life. And like for me, it was a no-brainer. Do you know what I mean? I wanted to be able to live a life that I'm happy to live. Like I didn't have to want to dread every morning. You know what I mean?
And at that time, were you getting like treatment and help with your own condition? Or were you kind of dealing with yourself? You were getting
I was getting help as well. I've been through different counseling throughout my whole life. My father passed away when I was younger, so my mom was always very good for putting me into counseling. But it was always grievance counseling. So when my mental health issues started coming up, like it was due to trauma as a child, but a lot of it was undiagnosed at that stage. I was going to like anger management classes through school. I was going to therapy through my doctor. My doctor put me on medication, and I found that like all of those things in conjunction worked, but it's very, very difficult to get into therapy and find a good therapist. That's the thing. It's finding a therapist that's good to work with. I've done therapy and I've hated it, but I was very lucky to find somebody who was very open-minded and introduced me to things like meditation and being open, you know, open-minded and mindfulness. Like those are the things in conjunction with cannabis that have helped. It wasn't cannabis solely, you know.
No, definitely. Cannabis kind of helps with the empowerment of the individual with engaging in those sort of techniques, because it's very grounding, and it brings you very much into the present. I think like with some of the conditions you described, you know, it's either worrying about the future or about the past, you know, those kind of conditions. Whereas cannabis, I think it can help with grounding a person and then to meditate, you know, as you talked about those mindfulness practices. Like I'd certainly agree with that kind of a holistic way of dealing with these things, because a lot of the times, as you said, like these undiagnosed issues, like you can't just like prescribe somebody a pill and that goes away. No, there's a bit of internal work there that kind of people have to do, and a lot of the times doctors you go out to see, they're not equipped to deal with that. So you're one of the lucky ones, I suppose, who did get a person who did engage with you in that. And I think there's a lot more of that, I suppose, now being seen within the kind of the mental health field for kids dealing with these sort of things. I'm even hearing more about it coming from my own kids coming out of school. Like my teacher was talking about that thing you talk about, Dad, you know, that mindfulness stuff. And I'm like, that's great to hear. I'm glad to hear that this has been talked about, like, because it's a tool everybody needs, like not just people who've had problems before, like, but just it's something you need to have, so when these problems do come up, you know how to deal with them, like, and you're not just clutching at straws, if you will. But I suppose with that, and saying that you did have an open-minded kind of therapist there who was talking about these things, but was there any point you talked to him about your microdosing then, or was that something you were never really comfortable with here?
So it wasn't something that I was very comfortable with, but my last session with that therapist, I did mention it to him, because he made me feel he helped me feel comfortable in that situation. I didn't feel judged when I was with him. So I felt like it was something that I could disclose. At the time, I was very unsure if this is something that I disclose because I'm telling him of illegal activity. Is this something that he has to move forward with? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was aware at the time that I had just turned 18. So like, I was just being mindful of that. But like, he, whether or not he judged me in that moment, he didn't let me know.
Okay.
All he said is, if this is something that's working for you, I don't see why it's not a good option once you're doing it responsibly.
Yeah.
And that's when I learned how to use cannabis responsibly.
Excellent. Yeah, that's good to hear. No, that's a good interaction you had, Derby, as I saw sometimes people within that profession, just because of some of the indoctrination, the misinformation that's spread by those professionals, barriers can come up and fear and stigma get applied then towards the person. Like, you know, it's like, oh, maybe this is actually causing your problems. And I've seen that happen before with a friend who suffered abuse at the hand of his dad growing up. And he had a bit of a psychotic break then later in life. And when he went to get help, they very much focused in on his drug use. And I was just like, no, his drug use is a symptom of the underlying, the bigger issue there, like, which was he got abused as a young person. And I think for a good couple of months, like, they were very much focused on him and his abstinence rather than actually addressing his past things. So, no, it can be an issue there, I suppose. Over in Boston now, since when did you actually get there, I suppose, most recently?
I moved back here 4 years ago this May. It'll be 4 years this May.
Okay, so you would have been there around the transition period. So from the into the recreational market, if you will, I suppose.
Exactly. I was actually working in one of the dispensaries in Massachusetts that was the first to sell recreational cannabis. So that was really, really amazing to be a part of. That was like, you know, in a sense, it's historical. You know what I mean? Medical cannabis has been... medical marijuana has been available for years, but now that it's recreationally available, it's a good step. I was there for you know, the transition into that, and it was wonderful to see.
Was medical cannabis then, was that long before it, or was that around the same time?
I believe that medical cannabis was probably 3 or 4 years before recreational cannabis. That's just due to the availability. Like, they had been I believe voted in around a similar time. But once something is voted in, writing up all the regulations and actually getting the ball rolling with things takes a couple of years to get done.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. So, and that dispensary that you're working in, would that have been dealing with only patients then before that transition? Or
Before the transition, everyone was just medical. And now there are facilities that are both medical and recreational, or there's both individual. So it's great for all, you know, to be involved, because even I've had people come and visit me over here, and because I'm a medical patient here, they've been recreational, so we've been able to go into the same facility together and buy product together, even though I'm getting my medicine and they're getting their recreational stuff.
Nice, that's good. And are you still working with a therapist or anything like that over there then, and they're okay then with the cannabis use, and that's much more acceptable over there?
Yeah. So like, it's, I am still seeing therapists, and I feel like that's something that I'm always going to have to do just for myself. I don't necessarily see a therapist right now because I have anything specific wrong at the minute.
Yeah.
But for me, it also helps like process things that go on. Like, I learn how to communicate better. I learn how to be a better person in society, kind of, you know what I mean? I'm not just thinking of myself when I'm going to these. So I find that helpful as well.
That's good, yeah.
But I am very open with my doctors in general, and then anyone who I see for my behavioral mental health as well. I'm very open about my cannabis use. There are some doctors who will always like kind of, you know, coach me on it. Oh, it's probably not the best thing to be doing. I actually had a doctor coach me on about like not smoking cannabis before, and then charge me for it. They tried to charge me for like a smoking cessation fee, I think it was called. There's situations like that do happen too. Not everyone is comfortable with it,
yeah.
But like, when I first started using cannabis for medicine, my whole family, like the majority of my family, was against it. My mom was totally against it. Like, to this day, she's still not too keen, but she just sees how much it helps, so she's a lot more open-minded with it. But that judgment comes, and that stigma comes with cannabis, and I feel like it's going to be there for a long time. But yeah, I know the benefits it has had for me, so what other people think doesn't bother me in that in those moments.
Yeah, well, I suppose in respect to that, like we've had almost 100 years of miseducation there, of people, like, they've been indoctrinated to think that this is some sort of the devil's lettuce, if you will, like that, as they called it. And we've been told that it had no medicinal qualities for so long that we do. We've a bit of time there still before it will be properly accepted, I suppose, into the medical realm, because there is still a lot of resistance to it. Just because of the nature of it. But I suppose really when we look at it, it's been one of the longest used medicines within human kind of culture. Like, as far back as records have been taken, there's evidence of cannabis, varieties of cannabis being used for medicinal reasons. So it's it will take a bit of time, but it is it's its rightful place in the medical cabinet, I suppose, if you will, of the professionals to be worked with. Because it's a tool, and if you work with it correctly, as you rightfully said, when you're using it correctly, because it can be abused. I'm not going to sit here and say cannabis can't be abused. No, cannabis can be abused too, but that the harms of that abuse, like, it's not as bad, I suppose, as the harms of even abusing alcohol or cigarettes, for that matter, I suppose.
And just while we're on, like, the medical side of it, there in the 1800s, there was actually a doctor, Sir William Brooke O'Shaughnessy. That's and right. He was an Irish doctor. A Limerick man. He wrote a medical journal on cannabis and, like, the benefits of the medicinal side effects. And, like, you know, hemp was grown in Ireland for hundreds of years, unfortunately, at not a great time, like when we were, overruled by the British. But, like, hemp was grown, and that's cannabis. That's what it is. And that was just before it had the medicinal benefits. We were just using it to build houses and stuff like that instead.
It's funny enough, I suppose, over 100 years ago, you had the Irishman bringing forward that. And I think at the time he declared, like, that we have a miracle cure for childhood convulsions or something like that. I'm kind of paraphrasing him there. But then I suppose over 100 years later, now we have Irish mammies, like, out there fighting for what he was saying 100 years ago is a cure for. What they're fighting for now is childhood epilepsy. It's probably one of the more prominent cases here, like with Vera Toomey and her walk to Dublin and stuff like. And it's just a real crime that these people still to this day have to fight for this. And even people like yourself, like, that you would face stigma from certain doctors, like, within professions because of this miseducation, like, that they've been misled with. It's unfortunate. But how I suppose you've said that things have improved, but was that difficult to get your family to accept it? Was that something you had to hide for quite a time when you were at home?
I was at home, I had to hide it quite a bit. Anytime mom would, like, suspect or find anything, sure, she'd flush it down the toilet. Oh, and I'd be allergic. But I also tried to respect her at the same time, because I was living in her house. Do you know what I mean? Once I moved out of her house, I feel like she kind of started to understand a little bit more. Mm-hmm. It wasn't that, like, I'm doing this, to get back at you kind of a thing. Like, it wasn't anything like that, but I feel like that's what she thought it was. Because when I was younger, I got my stomach pumped at 13 from drinking. Like, I don't have a good history with alcohol, and I actually choose not to drink alcohol now unless it's on occasion due to the relationship that I have with it. Yeah. But that was something, like, a comparison for her that I kept throwing out there. Well, would you prefer me to be drinking and carrying on the way I was, or would you prefer me to be this person I am today with assistance of cannabis and marijuana? Yeah. I was like, this is something that's helping me. And, like, wouldn't it be worse if I was out doing other things? Do you know what I mean? So I think after a long while of me trying to have that open communication with her, which is something I'm lucky that my mom has always been so communicative with me. Alongside that, I just feel like that, as well as her seeing everything and the outcome it's had for me, and how beneficial cannabis has been for me. She can now sit in a room while I medicate, whereas before that would have been I never thought that would have happened. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
And can I ask then, I suppose, on that, what would your preferred choice of consumption be? Would it be edibles or combustion, smoking?
Oh, yeah, I typically prefer combustion or smoking, for multiple reasons. The main reason is because I feel like with edibles, I have a hard time breaking them down, and it usually takes me to the 2-hour mark before I can feel anything, and I have to have a high dose. So 2 hours after eating it, I'm usually after forgetting that I ate it, and then it hits me all of a sudden and it actually makes me anxious.
Yeah.
So edibles aren't really my go-to. In saying that, I do take CBD edibles every day to try and help combat some of that anxiety. But smoking is definitely my preferred method due to the fact that it's instantaneous. I can take one or two hits and realize, okay, my anxiety is now tempered. I can put this to the side till later.
Yeah.
And it's a pretty instantaneous calm down too.
Mm-hmm.
As well as both of those things, like in conjunction, I was in a car accident a couple of years ago and I have really bad whiplash from it. And in the last year or two, it's gotten worse. Like as I'm getting older, it's progressing.
Yeah.
But I found really good topicals, like a CBD and a THC topical that I absolutely like would be lost without. Like I was given muscle relaxers after the accident, like nothing worked, but this CBD cream that I'm after finding is giving me so much relief that I didn't think was possible. I really nice. Didn't.
Yeah, it's great to hear people finding so much benefit in a plant that apparently has no medicinal benefits. It's crazy.
Exactly.
And over in Boston, and the choice of cannabis, I suppose it's wide and high THC to everything. And is the CBD offering improving, or it was that always there?
So I feel like it's always been there. CBD that you can get in a dispensary is usually different to CBD that you can buy in a store. The reason being is because CBD that you buy in a store is usually hemp CBD.
Yeah.
So hemp CBD is the male plant. It doesn't hold the medicinal benefit, but it's used for industrial reasons.
Mm-hmm.
The female plant is where all the cannabinoids live. So CBD, THC, and it's more full spectrum that way. So because of that, I feel like when cannabis first became legalized, it was definitely having the highest THC. Everyone just wanted to get high.
Mm-hmm.
But now as it's kind of evolving, people are realizing that using multiple cannabinoids together create an entourage effect is something that we called within the industry. So that means like a way I explain it, and I hate comparing alcohol and cannabis. That's not what I'm getting at here.
Yeah.
But what I am going to say is, like, if you have THC on its own, that's like having a shot of Jägermeister,
mm-hmm.
right? And then if you have THC and CBD, it's like having a Jäger bomb. So like it just kind of enhances the effect. Like it's going to get you, like THC on its own is going to get you to where you want it to be, but it's just a more pleasant experience with the other cannabinoids in there, especially CBD. For me, it kind of tampers down some of that like intense high effect, because CBD actually can taper down like some of the psychoactivity of THC.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. I suppose even someone in your situation, it would be important, I think. And I suppose from my own understanding of the pharmacology, and I don't know if you would experience this yourself, but dosing up with your CBD before hitting your THC then afterwards can give the CBD an advantage over the THC, because they both compete for the same receptor. So that's what happens. Basically, if you take them together, they're competing together. And I think if memory serves more correctly, CBD has a little bit more of an affinity for that receptor than the THC. So it'll win out more often than not for attachment. So for someone in your situation where a big flood of THC on the receptors could actually bring on a bit of an anxiety attack. You know, it's like, oh, shit, I'm really high. Are they looking at me over there? Oh, no, I'm really uncomfortable now. Do you know, that's a kind of, and that can be mitigated there with that CBD offering. So it's, and I love that you said that as well, that since the industry started over there, that it initially started off of everybody wanting the most bang for their buck, I suppose. Give me that high THC. But after time now, they're evolving. Like, I suppose, would I be right in saying that there's like a flavor chasers over there who are going in for the taste, the terpenes, And exactly. You don't even care anymore about the THC or anything.
Exactly. Yeah. Cannabinoid profile and terpene profile are a huge thing right now. And you can find terpenes in essentially everything. Mm-hmm. Like everything that we eat and drink has its own terpene in it. You know, most of the things, like anything with a citrus scent, is probably like limonene or something like that in there. Do you know what I mean? So like terpenes are all over the place, and they've been found to have benefits in different areas of their own. Essential oils, like that's terpene, like that's aromatherapy through that's using right, like a terpene from the plant, you know what I mean? So I it makes sense to me that that is what a lot of the medicinal benefit comes from too. And from my own experience, like I seek out specific strains that have like myrcene in them or linalool in them, because they're terpenes that assist with my anxiety, but they also help keep me like relaxed and focused. It can be very difficult to find specific strains with those things in it. And it's a little bit more down like the genetic route. You know what I mean? It's you in instances like that, you have to have somebody growing it and tracking it and testing it. Like it can't just be off the street stuff. Yeah. You know what I mean? But definitely like terpene chases are a thing. A lot of my friends call themselves terp slots, because they're always looking for the terps.
Ah, yes, love it. Are you still working within the dispensary realm, or is it just you were saying you're working in the care? Is it care?
I don't work for care now anymore. That kind of just took too much of a toll with my anxiety and everything too. I was doing end of life care, so I was watching people die every day. Yeah. It was like a beautiful experience that I got to be there with these people, but it was just too emotionally tolling. So I am still in the cannabis industry solely. When I started working in the cannabis industry in the dispensary itself as a bud tender, that was my sole job, and it has been since. But I have moved up the ranks a couple of steps since getting in the industry 3 years ago, and I'm currently working on the more corporate, the more office end of it now at the minute, writing documents for training and approving documents that are going to be uploaded and such like that. Oh, so yeah. It's more back end office operation work, but yeah, it's cool to see from, like, I went in on the ground floor, and it's cool to see like every step you take, how big this industry actually is and how much actually goes into it.
Yeah. And how many I wanted to ask, actually, there, as I almost forgot, have you ever heard of Valerie Corral at all, or the Women's Alliance for Medical Marijuana?
I haven't, but I'll have to look into that, because I've actually assisted in my company in the diversity and inclusion about women, and specifically like how can we attract women to want to work in this industry and stuff like that. So I'll definitely look into her. You might send me some of her information.
Valerie's an amazing one. We brought her over to Ireland to bring her on tour to talk about our work. But I suppose the relationship there would be, Valerie also worked with people at their end of life, that transition period, like. But she also talks about the benefits there of cannabis and other kind of plant medicines that they would have been working with down below. And I think she's in California, but it was the Women's Alliance for Medical Marijuana, WAM, was the name of the organization she set up. But an amazing woman. But again, like, similar to yourself there, like, she's seen the benefits of cannabis, and I suppose it's really about the freedom of choice for those individuals to choose how they wish to end their life to end. Like, do they want to be on that morphine, or would they like something maybe that leaves them more coherent, more enabled, and a better quality of life just at that transition period as a person leaves us? Like, so that's the only reason I kind of asked, have you heard of her? I thought you might have, because her work is incredible.
I'll definitely be looking into her though, for sure.
Perfect. Can I ask around the laws in Boston? Do you know if do you know much about the laws at all there?
I do. I have a little bit of knowledge with it. So basically, with the laws here, there's medical and recreational laws, and then there's like your general state laws, and then you have your federal law. So cannabis is not federally legal yet. It's something that is being worked over here. It is legal in my state, medically and recreationally. So if you want to become a medical patient, you just have to go and, you know, go see a medical marijuana doctor. They ask you a couple of questions, like, what are you in here for today? And then, like, they'll decide whether or not they approve you for medical marijuana license. Okay. Once you get medical marijuana card, like, you can get it over the age of 21. You can get it 18 to 21. But if you're 18 to 21, you have to, like, you know, have your caregiver with you.
Okay.
Which would usually be a parent or a guardian.
Mm-hmm.
And then the same, like, under 18 is possible to be a medical marijuana patient, but you have to have your doctor's approval. And it doesn't necessarily have to be your primary care doctor. Like, there's just medical marijuana doctors. You know what I mean?
For that, yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. But, and is the license valid then for a year and renewal after a year? Or?
Exactly. Yeah. Valid for a year, renewal after a year. But it's, like, it's fair. You know what I mean? I think that, like, you're allotted 10 ounces every 60 days. Sure, like, use cannabis every day and I don't touch that. Like, I don't, you know what I mean? Yeah. I'll probably use maybe half of the allotment on a bad couple of months, like, but
yeah,
that's it. But from there, then, like, if you're not a medical marijuana patient, under 21, it is illegal.
Mm-hmm.
If you're caught selling to somebody under the age of 21, you can go to jail for 5 to 15 years with a $100,000 fine on top of it.
Lovely.
If you're a minor and you get caught with cannabis, they will usually bring you home. They'll make you do a drug awareness course and you may get fined as well. Depending on the age, it's a little bit stricter. Like, I think if you're found 16 at, like, 16 with cannabis, you have to do a longer drug awareness course, kind of an ideal. But that seems
sensible enough. Like, you know, they give a kid a bit of education, bring them home to their parents and enlist them in an education program. Like, that's sensible.
It is currently. Exactly. And if somebody needs it at that age and, like, they're using it for a specific reason, maybe that's going to bring awareness to, like, oh, they actually need this as a medicine.
Yeah,
you know, not every parent is going to be that open-minded, of course, but at the same time, like, I feel like if the stigma wasn't there, people wouldn't be being brought home with it.
Yeah.
but yeah, so, like, with all that being said, the laws are pretty strict. The regulations are pretty strict. Like, you can carry up to an ounce on your person. If I was driving my car down the road and a cop pulled me over and there was an ounce in my car, I'm allowed to have that in my car. I'm not going to be arrested for possession.
Yeah.
If I was arrested for
DUI in that situation,
if I was arrested for suspected DUI, they can't necessarily, in Massachusetts anyway, they don't test for THC in blood, hair, or urine samples.
Okay.
So usually for DUI, like, unless it's alcohol or some other kind of drug, it's not going to come up. And I believe the reason that they do that for the DUI is because a lot of people are medical users.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm a medical user, cannabis is going to be found in my hair cells for months, if not years, because of how much cannabis I use additionally too. Same with my blood and urine. Even if I didn't use cannabis for a week, you'd probably still find it. Do you know what I mean?
Oh yeah, so, definitely. If you were in Ireland, you would be breaching the limit. It's 1 nanogram per milliliter of blood, and that'll be like that for a few weeks, I'd say, if you're someone like
crazy,
yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I heard of somebody who went to Amsterdam and a couple of weeks later came home and got pulled over and got tested and his license is now revoked. Like, it was a week or so later. You know, he tried explaining it and there's no hair in it.
Yeah. It's an effective tool that the authorities use to scare people from trying to consume, because I know a lot of people who actually choose not to drive because they consume cannabis. They're just like, it's too easy to get caught in the car. No, I'm not going to drive. I'll just take the bus and I'm going to walk. I'm not going to risk it. It's like, all right, yeah. So it is effective in certain ways, but just not the way in which the government would have liked for it to be effective.
Exactly. That's a big part of it then too. But yeah. I think one of the biggest things about the regulations over here now at the minute is, like, things are legal, but because it's such a new business still over here, like, the prices in the East Coast are a little bit more expensive than on the West Coast. So people don't want to come and spend dispensary prices all of the time.
Yeah.
And there are people on the street, like, people are allowed to grow up to 6 plants if you're over the age of 21 in your household.
Yeah.
If you have 2 adults over the age of 21, you can grow up to 12 plants per household. So, like, if you're growing your own anyway, there's no need for that black market if you don't want to go to a dispensary to purchase cannabis. And I think that's where the regulation is winning in this situation. I feel not a lot of people are comfortable to go in and give their information and become medical patients, or to go in and do a recreational transaction and pay that much money. But they still have the opportunity to grow this product in the privacy of their home, where nobody is going to figure out about it. You know what I mean? They can grow it legally there. They can learn more about the plant that way too. And not just purchase it like you would, you know, anything else.
And I suppose some people in that situation then might see that as being less medical, like that you can't be growing your own medicine. Like I've heard that argument be made, but you would attest that that's false, like they're wrong, yeah?
I would, I'd strongly disagree with that because, you know,
The cannabis that you're giving patients over there is the same cannabis that recreational patients are also receiving through the dispensaries. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. There's no difference in the product that they receive.
Yeah.
And there is limitations on how much milligram adult use can have per purchase. And we do limit how much can be purchased per transaction for recreational users. But the product they're getting is still produced together. It's grown in the same room. Like it's the same product. It's just, once it's packaged, they're saying, okay, this one is going to be adult use and this one's going to be medical.
Well, it actually has to be sorted out at that point. It's not even at the point of purchase or?
Once it's packaged. Sometimes it can be at the point of purchase, but like in the situation that they make a product, let's say now they make a couple of chocolate bars.
Mm-hmm.
And the chocolate bars for recreational are supposed to be 100 milligrams of THC at the most.
Yeah.
So let's say they test, when they come back from testing after they've been made and packaged and everything, they come back from testing at 105 milligrams. That cannot be sold to recreational at that point.
Okay.
So then I believe we'd be able to put it up as a medical product because it would be, again, with medicine, like
it can be
you're just going to dose it differently, essentially, is how they're going to look at it. But if it's recreational, it's seen as like, oh, can't do that.
Yeah, there's still a few kinks there in the regulations, but it's getting there. It seems it's still a work in progress anyway. If it was to be, I suppose, legal here in Ireland, would you think that 18 is an acceptable age, or would you be in kind of support of the 21? How would you feel there in that regards? Because I know in Boston, it is 21 for alcohol as well and stuff like that. So that's the kind of the age.
So exactly.
Would you think that's an age? Because I know some people actually have said 25 to me and I'm like, what?
So like I'm a little bit biased in this situation due to the fact of my relationship with alcohol. I was introduced to alcohol very young and I drank from 12 or 13 up until I was 17, like on a regular basis. Do you know what I mean? I definitely was too young to be drinking alcohol at the time, but wasn't aware of it.
Yeah.
I think that 18 in Ireland, in my opinion, is a little bit too young to be able to, like, I don't know. I like, honestly, I won't touch on the alcohol side of it. What I will say is I think that 21 would be a great age for all products like this, cannabis, alcohol, tobacco. Yeah. My reason for that being is because with cannabis products, like they're doing over here, you have the option to apply for medical license. Mm-hmm. So if you're under the age of 21 and you want to consume cannabis or feel like you need to consume cannabis because it's going to be beneficial for you, you could apply for a medical license. Other than that, I do believe 21 is a good age.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I'm a hypocrite in saying that because I started smoking cannabis before I turned 21. But again, a lot of my reasons were for medicinal reasons. I feel like if I didn't learn the medicinal reasons early on, it would have been something I probably would have abused. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting one. It's a conversation we're having, I suppose, around the age of consumption really for kids because, really, when we leave kids, adults at 18 get access to alcohol, like we kind of see the mess that unfolds there with that. But I suppose that with cannabis, at least if they're to abuse it in the same capacity, like the extent of the dangers is not, they're not the same. Like the way in which you react to alcohol, how it leaves you so dissociated, it's not the same with cannabis. So I think having it as an alternative there at 18, because I think if kids can, or if 18 year olds can get access to alcohol at that age, I think it's important that they also have an access to the alternative there, because otherwise there's going to be a focus for those younger people on that. So I would always kind of be of the opinion that if we are to keep one at 21, the other, everything should be at 21, because otherwise the young people are going to focus on what are actually more harmful ones at 18, the alcohol and the tobacco here. But no, I think it's an interesting discussion to be had.
I'd agree with that as well, though, for sure. Everything you just said, I agree with strongly there on that. And
you know that in Ireland, sorry for interrupting you there, but did you know in Ireland that if you're a consenting parent, you can actually allow your kids to drink at home from pretty much any age. I don't think there's actually an age limit there. As long as you're a parent at home, you provide the alcohol to your kid, you can allow them to drink. Obviously, now there's going to be intrusions from social welfare if you're being negligent about it. But like, if you can show your kids drinking responsibly, they're going to be like, yeah, that's grand.
Exactly. And I feel like it should be a similar law for cannabis at that stage. Yeah. Again, from my personal experience, I've never been rude, disorienting, anything like that on cannabis. But I have been the worst version of myself with alcohol.
Yeah. And I suppose you're over in Boston now for the last 4 years, but would you think that Ireland is far away from this, from legalizing cannabis?
I hope not. I like, there's a lot of benefits that come with having cannabis legal. In the US in 2019, they made $12.2 billion on cannabis sales alone. And there was 220,000 jobs created. Most of the jobs were minimum wage of like $15 an hour. You know, there's so much tourism comes with it. There's communities built on it. There's jobs. There's investment opportunities. There's so much comes with it. I think that it would be the most beneficial thing for Ireland to do. We have the space. We have the people that need the work. You know, like the revenue that we would get from Irish people alone would be unreal. But like, Amsterdam survives on its tourism, basically. Mm-hmm. And that's thanks to cannabis. And that's why cannabis is still so okay over there. You know what I mean?
That's right.
I
think it's not even legal there, actually. It's funny enough.
Exactly. It's a gray area. Yeah. So I think it would be the most beneficial thing for Ireland if cannabis was to be legalized, or at least decriminalized to some extent. And do you know what I mean?
You said 2018 there, those figures are from, was it 2018? So that was a time
2019.
Yeah, so I think that was a time when maybe the US had like 13 states or something along 11 or 13 states where recreational use was allowed, and a bit more for the medical, and they still were able to generate that amount.
Exactly. And just, and yes, that was probably just with the like California, Oregon over in the West Coast, and maybe Massachusetts was included. Yeah,
they generate in their state, that's right.
And there's more every week, like New York just got recreation cannabis legalized last week, you know, so it's constantly evolving.
That's right. They estimate, I think, in New York, like the creation of another 60,000 jobs and over about 300 million for the revenue from it, like that's from the tax takings. Like that's a sizable chunk of change there. Like that's it's crazy to think that who was making all of this money beforehand, because wow, like to think about how much that those billions that have been made now since legalization, like that if legalization didn't happen, that was the cartels, like that was the drug gangs out there making all of that money. It's mad to think that any politician would support continuing that kind of policy that leaves so much money in the control of these people who don't have community at the heart of the decisions they make. Like, I'd imagine your dispensaries that you've worked in have been very active in engaging with the community that they support and that they're established in. So I hope Ireland gets to see something more sensible like that in the not too distant future.
Me too. I hope so. Do you have an estimate, a guesstimate on when you think that would be?
Myself, I'm hoping in the next 12 months that we would see some step towards decriminalization, obviously, but decriminalization with the continued engagement of discussions around how we would actually regulate it then, that the decriminalization is just a part of the regulation process. So I would hope that would happen in the next 12 months. And I really think it could happen a lot sooner if people really similar to how people went out and protested around the water protests. Yeah. I think we need the same kind of people power now out in the street protesting, calling for change, calling for action from the government. I don't believe we can phone them up or send emails any longer. I think we've been disregarded there. I don't know if you've heard of the Cannabis Risk Alliance at all. Have you heard of them, actually?
No, briefly, yeah.
Yeah, our government are engaging with these people and listening to them upon the nonsense that they're spouting about cannabis, and they're helping keep it illegal here in Ireland. And meanwhile, and they're ignoring.
Not to interrupt you as well, but that's part of it then too, is like, as the Irish population, we haven't been happy with the government as long as I've lived there, which was over 15 years ago, and it hasn't changed, and it's because we're not changing who our leaders are, and that's a big part of it, especially as younger generations. We need to be the ones to go out and vote, because, you know, everyone that's happy with the situation is happy with it, but there's more of us unhappy than not, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And I would say not just go out and vote, but run in the elections too, because a lot of the times in electoral areas, you only have the Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil candidates, or maybe even a Green Party in there, but none of them can really be trusted. And a lot of them, they don't represent the views and opinions of the people within those communities. So I hope to see a lot more young people like of 20s, 30s kind of coming out and representing their communities, running as independents, because it is possible. I kind of ran myself last year and I was very surprised by it, and the reception I got from it, I was quite well received. So I think more of that would be a lot very beneficial to Ireland and how our communities will develop over the years to come, because as you said, if we keep voting in these guys in power, Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil, we're not going to see much change at all.
Exactly. I actually had heard about you running all the way out here you were the talk of the town out here at that time, so that was absolutely fantastic, and I hope that if you can and are willing to take that opportunity again, you know, that you would, because if again, Martin, if there's anyone could do it, it would be you, do you know?
Yeah, well, I won't turn it down. If I see the opportunity come, I'm definitely going to run again. And as I say, I'm always transparent about the issues I support, and I'll never be dishonest with people.
Okay.
And that's probably why I'll never make it.
Support anyway.
Excellent. Thanks very much. And I'm surprised we didn't cross paths. Actually, I seen when I friended you, like friends with my sister and things like, so it's, we're not too far apart at all.
Yeah, she went to school with my younger brother and sister all throughout the years, and a couple of years ago when I was out here, actually your other sister came out to visit she was out here for the summer with her partner, I believe, before they moved. She came out to visit. And she was over at my uncle's pool in Boston with me and all.
Jeez, small world it is.
I know.
Well, I know you've a meeting to go to there now shortly, so I won't keep you any longer. Is there anything you'd like to add in yourself, any messages to anybody or anything like that?
I just wanted to thank you for having me on. It's been an absolute pleasure. I'm definitely I've gotten a couple of suggestions from people at home, and I'm definitely considering starting up some sort of social media page to help with awareness of cannabis and the different aspects, you know, of cannabis itself, just like how it's not just the herb that you smoke, because I feel like that's where most of the stigma is around anyway. So I'll keep you in touch with all of that, but again, thanks for having me. I'm always happy to be an advocate and support those who support the cause, you know.
Well, thank you very much too. It's been an absolute pleasure to sit and talk with you, and to catch up like this. And I'll certainly be keeping in touch, and I would be delighted to have you back on in future. And who knows, maybe I might even get the opportunity to travel over and visit you and experience the industry itself.
Brilliant. Thanks, Martin.
And there you go, guys. I hope you all enjoyed that conversation that I had with Circa. It was a pleasure to have her on, and it was good to get the contrast there, I suppose, between the two places, Cork and Boston, you know, Circa experiencing both and working now over there in the industry. Great to see and hear, and I look forward to catching up with her in future too. I hope we're able to bring some of that prosperity to Ireland, where people like Circa, like myself, are able to work in an industry and create careers for ourselves, really, where we're bringing benefits and positivity into our communities, and unlike what we're currently forced to live with, which is prohibition, where people like Circa get cannabis illegally and benefit from it illegally, and thereby support criminal enterprises in doing so. You know, it's a crazy contrast there between the two environments. One in Boston, where people, both medical and recreational, can buy and get cannabis and support businesses, and those businesses support communities with jobs and with fundraisers and things like that. Whereas here in Ireland, the same people are supporting criminal enterprises or are being brought to court for growing their own cannabis, you know. Crazy, but I, as I say in the in that interview there and that conversation, that I really do think that it is, that the power is within our hands out there, and that if we want to see change, we could bring it about sooner rather than later. And the only thing we have to do is just literally get out and demand it, not stop asking for it, and demand it now at this point. As I say, I will be back with more interviews anyway, guys. I hope you enjoyed that one. So thanks again, everybody, for listening, and stay blazed and keep her lit. Much love. Peace.